Nordic animism is a response to what you would call an indigenous call, or an indigenous request, a call that goes into a global cultural dialogue that is playing out between colonized and colonizer groups. As I've been trying to make clear many times, this does not imply any becoming indigenous, because indigenous is a label that should be reserved for the empowerment struggles of those peoples whose traditional culture and life ways are some, and sometimes their physical existence, is under colonial attack. That is a slightly longer argument, and I have made video about it, but those of us who belong to majority populations should not, I think, self-identify as indigenous. But that doesn't mean that we can't use indigenous knowledge on ourselves and decolonizing knowledge. In that case, I choose to label this kind of knowledge traditional knowledge, which means basically the same kind of knowledge, just in the context of people who haven't been the victims of colonization and who often have undergone more intensive modernization. Now, thinking in this way, thinking with traditional knowledge on Euro-descended cultural heritage, that is actually a response to this widespread call which is going out from indigenous spaces directed at majority populations in so many different ways. This call can take many, many forms, but often indigenous thinkers, elders, voices, individuals plead for Euro-majorities to start thinking in some kind of indigenous ways about themselves in order to, one, learn less destructive ways of being in the world just in general, and two, stop leeching on indigenous culture. Indigenous authors such as Robin Wall Kimmerer, Tyson Juncker-Porter and others all encourage majority populations to somehow retrieve indigeneity or qualities of indigenous ways of being in the world. Indigenous ways of knowing, for instance. Many have experienced this call in very direct ways, both on the personal level or in the public media. You know, this can be indigenous friends who are encouraging you to find your own tribe or ancestrality or tradition, you know, or, you know, sometimes go in the forest and find the witches even. Or it can be books that you've read from indigenous authors that encourages indigenous ways of thinking, even sometimes using the expressions becoming indigenous to place or so on, or something of that sort, even though I don't think we should use that formulation. But that's a bit of a different discussion. So a host of Euro-majority producers of culture are inspired by this call. Many people, you know, like the Irish journalist and author Mancon McGann, it's just one example, the author Peggy Ayers, the Norwegian scholar Professor Per Ingvar Haukeland in Norway. These are just a couple of prominent examples, but there are many, many others. In the US, as it's often the case, people are a little bit ahead of the game, and this dialogue is today basically being formalized by some people who are running a very successful and well-thought-out course program, which is called White Awake. I've given classes there myself, and an important part of this course is basically platforming indigenous voices who are making the indigenous call in the form of basically indigenous teachers directly guiding white people towards ways of thinking about their own roots. I met the indigenous call myself for the first time, I think when I was around 16 years old, and I was briefly involved with an indigenous Mexican activist organization that was working on repatriation of some cultural heritage. And the leader of this organization was a man called Xochinostl Gomora, and he was working, giving lectures all over Europe back in the 1990s. And Gomora consistently encouraged audiences to recover contact with their own cultural roots. I discussed this with this Irish scholar named Jimmy O'Brien. He is working on decolonizing from an Irish perspective and dealing a lot with whiteness and these kind of things. And his assessment is that this indigenous call and the non-Indigenous response is very widespread as a form of exchange. There are people that you meet in all kinds of situations who are in some way or other shaping their life for their voice as a response to the Indigenous call. From rock stars to decolonial scholars to spiritual hippies to homesteaders. At some point, I put out a post asking followers for the experience of this Indigenous call, and I was immediately given a lot of these personal experiences where many have directly been told, you know, to look for their Euro tradition by Indigenous relations or friends. And it's really important to set majority traditional knowledge like Nordic animism into this context of this dialogue between Indigenous and colonizer group. This context is important because if you just look at it from the outside, for instance, from a scholarly perspective, then it could be rather easy to fall into this kind of run-of-the-mill scholarship that would see any kind of engagement of white people with Indigenous culture as in itself inherently problematic, appropriative, romanticizing, exoticizing, or even worse, stuff that produces white power nativism. But symptomatically, such trends tend themselves, I think, to move into unfortunate spaces. I have encountered the scholarly critiques of the settlers' move to innocence, for instance, which I think is a deeply problematic concept, which understates the guilt innocence as the dimension, as the for the foundation for validity, right? Are you guilty or are you innocent? And then that goes on to assume a state of guilt, which is it is then problematic to want to escape. Now, imposing those assumptions on people in general, but most definitely on white people, is a complete ethical traffic accident. It's an absolutely horrible concept. I recommend that you see a video that I have on this exact topic, the Protestant interiorized ideas of guilt and how they are being reproduced in harmful ways when we're talking about white people. Now, often the problem of these kinds of critiques of Eurodescendant thinking with indigeneity is that they include or they bypass or they leave in obscurity, you know, this dialogue, this macrocultural dialogue where there is a widespread Indigenous call and there is a widespread will to respond to it. But a critique of Eurotraditional thinking that doesn't pay heed to this dialogue also entails a problem in how it frames these Indigenous voices themselves. Because if you make invisible the dialogue, you are obviously also making invisible the Indigenous voices in that dialogue, those Indigenous voices that you could say they're opening the dialogue. And when you are making the Indigenous voices invisible, you are occluding the Indigenous agency that is exerted through this dialogue. You're not respecting or allowing for the fact that Indigenous voices are inspiring and thereby contributing to individual voices like Nordic animism, but also on a macro level in impacting global culture today. And something slightly like that actually happened to me some time ago, where I was granted the dubious honor of being studied. There was actually a scholar who had studied Nordic animism, and in the abstract for his paper, he indicated that Nordic animism perhaps tended to develop an exotic image of Indigenous religiosity as a positive other. Now, when the scholar then gave his paper, he had done his homework more properly, so he actually didn't make that claim. But I found it very telling that this would be the knee-jerk reaction, because Nordic animism is built on very concrete, real dialoguing with Indigenous voices, like Tyson Jungaporta, Jungle Svani, Kura Frank, others, you know, and getting to know these people, platforming their voices, referencing these specific thinkers by name, of course, all the time. That's just a fact. But reducing that to an exotifying imagination of a positive other, then in a weird inversion, he, the scholar, is actually the one who's reducing these indigenous voices to my white imagination. You see that? All that concrete, real indigenous relation building and inspirational dialogue is becoming reduced to my white imagination. And this is a really, it's a more serious problem than that. I think it looks, I think it is structural racism. It occludes the indigenous voices in an agency in favor of maintaining this seclusion of the Eurodescendant thinking in this closed, secluded space of whiteness. And in my view, that actually implies white exceptionalism. White people as that exception who has to be encased in modernity and who's not allowed to build relation out of this seclusion into modernity. So this is just to say, please do acknowledge these attempts at a positive, respectful cultural exchange and dialogue between indigenous colonized groups and your majority ways of knowing and thinking. Please do criticize when stuff is developing in bad ways, becoming disrespectful, neoliberal co-opting, toxic stuff. But it is really important to also not just brush off this really central contemporary cultural dialogue, because that is the easy way. It is sort of, you know, it's the easy way for contemporary scholarship. I recently came across a book called Becoming Indigenous, which points out this problem of how white people are using and sometimes abusing indigenous culture. I think some really important points are being made in there. However, it's also really important to point out that a strict scholarly perspective that, for instance, accuses Nordic animism or other, like, for exotifying, that occludes that Nordic animism or other kinds of white decolonizing or practices of traditional knowledge, you know, thinking on Eurodescendant people, that it occludes that it's not just wavering in a contextual limbo. It is a contextual response to this kind of dialogue. And I would like to put this to the people who are starting to study these kind of things, to the writers of this book here, for instance. If you completely ignore, bypass, sidestep the positive agency of indigenous voices in reciprocal relation-making with white people in these cultural dialogues, then I think you're making indigenous voices and their agency invisible in order to contribute to the upholding of this exceptional status of white people as encased in modernity. So occluding indigenous agency in order to uphold white exceptionalism, it doesn't sound good, right? And it's important that you do not fall into that mode of thinking about how your descendant people are producing their culture today. Thanks a lot, and see you around.